Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. One of the things that we have to do is sell as many of our products as possible, get people into our services. But there is a new approach where we stop selling and start leading. We're going to talk about this big movement in this episode of Breakthrough Success. So today's guest is the president of People First Productivity Solutions, offering sales training, coaching, and leadership development programs. She leads the Stop Selling and Start Leading movement and founded the Sales Experts Channel. She is certified as an executive and sales coach and is a certified master of the Leadership Challenge. Her bestseller, Discover Questions, Get You Connected, has recently been named by HubSpot as one of the 20 most highly rated sales books of all time. Today's guest for episode 257 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Deb Calvert. Deb, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
The pleasure is mine, Mark. Thank you so much. And congratulations on bringing the Breakthrough Success to audiences 3 times a week on your way to daily, I hope.
Deb, thank you for taking the time to be on the show. Stop Selling, Start Leading. It's a very new type of approach. It's a movement, as we mentioned a little bit earlier. And before we get into like how we can embrace this idea, I'm wondering if you could give us a little background as to how the Stop Selling and Start Leading movement came to be.
Sure. Well, first of all, I should clarify, it's not about stopping the process of making sales. It's about making more sales. What this is all about is the behaviors that people show up, whether you are a content creator, an entrepreneur, a straight salesperson, whatever you are doing, you have buyers, you have people who want your products. And the behaviors that they want to see from you, the behaviors that they'll be more likely to respond to, are the ones that we wanted to nail down. So we conducted B2B buyer research, 530 buyers in a panel study. And we gathered stories from over 500 sellers about when they were at their personal best. And we figured out what those 30 behaviors are. 30 of them that if you will use them more frequently, people who would buy from you will be more likely to meet from you and more likely to buy from you. And here's the kicker, why the title is what it is. These 30 behaviors are much more typically associated with leadership than they are with stereotypical selling. So if you stop the old salesy stuff and you bring in yourself, your full potential to behave as a leader, you'll have it made.
And I really like this leadership approach. I mean, it's good that you were clear on that on the offset, because it's a different way of selling a product, but it's different from the traditional approach. And one of the things that I want to ask you is if we can go a little deeper into the difference between selling and leading, what that looks like, and the mindset between a seller and a leader.
You bet. And I'm going to be speaking directly from buyers, because we gathered a lot of information. So that those stereotypes, those negative, pervasive stereotypes about selling, that's what causes buyers to shut down. It's why they are not taking calls from business owners and salespeople who can really help them. They just view it as something that won't be worth their time, sadly, because as we know, it certainly could be worth their time. So when sellers are in selling mode, they come across to buyers as being self-serving, pushy, arrogant, and really not all that interested in the buyer, only in what they have to sell. Of course, those are stereotypes in many cases. Those are not fair, but that's what we're up against. That's what buyers are assuming that they're going to see from anybody who's in a selling role of any kind. What buyers are more likely to respond to, what they want to see more from us, are behaviors that are differentiating. They want to be inspired. They want to be able to trust someone that they're going to work with. They want to be able to feel like they're participants, fully co-creating the solutions that are going to be offered to them. And these are different behaviors that position us differently when we're in front of buyers and cause buyers to respond differently to us so that we really can engage and help them out.
And there's that theme of helping the buyer out, which, I mean, that's how you build long-term relationships. That's how you get repeat customers. It's not just a one-off transaction. It's not just sell, sell, sell until someone buys. It's generally wanting to help the customer. And some points that can mean like referring them to another product that you believe will help them even better. But it's all about helping the customer, as Deb mentioned, building up that loyalty. And one of the things you can do as you continue to help customers and they become more loyal, some of them may be open to helping to support your brand, perhaps as ambassadors. So how do you recommend we enlist others to support our brands and what we're doing?
Well, you know, it's all about, do they believe in us? And I'm talking about inside your organization, outside your own customers, whoever it is that you're enlisting. But they have to believe in us first. And believing in a product starts with believing in the people who are responsible for the product. That comes down to credibility. And in the language of leadership, credibility is a foundation. People need to be able to trust us. They need to be able to see that we're going to follow through on our promises and commitments. That's DWSYWID, an acronym that stands for do what you say you will do. Because ultimately, they can't believe your message if they don't believe in you as a messenger. So your credibility is something that you ought to be very thoughtful about, protective of, and then the brand extends from there. And if your product or your company brand is ever attacked by a competitor, what sets you apart is that you've got the differentiating relationship, the brand that comes from you are trustworthy, you are believable, you're credible. So you want that to be intact.
And I like that key about like getting people to believe in the brand, believe in what you're offering. That's something very important from a brand building standpoint and from getting others to support our brand. And how can we get more people to believe in what we're doing? Like, is that through a lot of storytelling? Is that through example, like how do we get people a stronger belief in what we're doing?
Well, you know, these are general answers because, of course, people are doing all kinds of different things out there. And so I'll say the best choice, and then it might not be feasible for everyone, but it is about the personal connection. There's something that we're calling in the book and in our research, the awesome connecting experience, ACE, awesome connecting experience. And that's very different from a social media connection. It's very different from, hey, you know, we exchanged some comments on the blog post or at LinkedIn. A connecting experience, right? Connecting means joining or linking. And so beyond that rapport building, beyond putting somebody's name into your database, it's about making people feel like they're the very center of your attention, making them feel like they matter to you. And when you have a connection like that, the experience that stems from it then is going to be highly personalized. It's going to be something that in that moment is special. It's going to be unique to the individual. It's going to be just what they're looking for in that moment. And it's going to cause them to have an even deeper emotional connection with you. So an awesome connecting experience,
those three pieces together. And I do want to give you some relief here. It doesn't take a fully formed relationship and years to build up to a place where you can have an awesome connecting experience. What buyers tell us gives them this feeling of connection, of feeling special, of getting exactly what they need in the moment. Oftentimes, it's as simple as you showed enough interest to ask a thought-provoking question, or you observed something that was unique. You didn't treat them like they were some generic crowd of buyers, but it was about them. You remembered their name. You took the time to understand their situation and position your brand or your product in a way that was going to be highly relevant for them. So yes, that could be storytelling. It could be a lot of things, but ultimately what the main purpose of anything you do is to get that connection and create that unique experience for the buyer.
And building that level of connection is like, it's very valuable. It's something that does build on that sense of loyalty. And it's not just customers who we should be building connections with. It's people who are in our niche who we can potentially collaborate with. And I've done a lot of collaborations, whether it's virtual summits, an upcoming bundle, or anything like that. So I'm wondering if you could provide us some guidance on how we can enable collaborations on a greater scale.
You bet. In fact, you used a key word there. These 30 behaviors, they roll up into 5 practices of exemplary leadership. That's an evidence-based framework of leadership based on the work of Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner over the past 30 years, tested worldwide. It's solid. Well, one of those 5 practices is called enable others to act. And it is what leads to strong collaborations. When you're enabling others to act, you are giving them space. You're giving them opportunity to meet you and to understand your interests because you're understanding their interests and you're both committed to creating something that's bigger than a compromise would ever be, for example. With a collaboration, of course, there's that genuine interest in what they have to bring and have to offer. And you're doing certain things, behaviors, like listening, like showing dignity and respect for those ideas that they bring forward by giving them room to co-create with you the insights and the solutions. It's not just that you're doing it for them, which to buyers feels like you're doing it to them. It's all about the with. What are we doing together here? And that's where the experience comes from. And you bet, that experience does create the sense of loyalty that you mentioned.
And I mean, one of the key things you also mentioned is experience. Like each time we like create a piece of content, each time we are interacting with a customer or with anyone else, we are providing them with an experience. So for some people, that's their first impression. For others, it's their second or third. But for each thing you produce, each call you have should be focused on having a really good experience with the person or people who you are engaging with. And one of the things that I want to ask you is that, like, we've talked about like some of the things that we can do to embrace this move and stop selling and start leading, which in turn boosts sales, because when we say stop selling, we've addressed this, stop having that this like pushy kind of approach that turns customers off. So I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from being able to make more sales for the products and services that they are providing?
Well, according to buyers, and this is also true in leadership in general. So for anybody that you might ever follow, constituent groups that you want to have following you, one of the biggest barriers to that is what I mentioned earlier, your credibility. If they don't believe that you will follow through, if they don't see you as someone they can count on, if you break even little promises, because at the beginning of a relationship, trust is so fragile anyway. So if you tell people, hey, I'm going to publish this content every Monday, but then sometimes it's not till Tuesday and sometimes you're taking a week off, it's that kind of thing without ever realizing it. Certainly you didn't mean to violate anybody's trust or think about this impairing your own credibility, but whatever promise we put out there, since that's all people have to go on, they tend to hold us to these really high standards. And when we don't meet the standards or their perception of them, that becomes a barrier to further engagement.
It's not fair. I know it's not entirely fair, but that's what they're telling us.
And it's interesting how you mentioned about the barriers that get set up. And like one of the things that we could do, and this is like great while we're doing this episode, is that listen to the buyer, listen to what they want. And that's a big part of getting sales as well, just taking the time to understand who the buyer is and some of their expectations they have of sales, what turns them on, what turns them off. So a lot of great insights in that answer. And one of the things that I also want to address is that throughout all our journeys, we all have several challenges that we face. And with that in mind, Deb, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge that you have faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Yeah. When I went into business for myself, I had a lot of challenges. So I'll roll them up to describe them this way. I was with a Fortune 500 company. I had recently moved cross country to take the role, and not 3 years into it, the company was sold and I needed to find a new job. Not in a great position to do that because we didn't want to leave the area. We'd just gotten established. And I was in an industry, the media industry, newspapers, that was, well, you know, not the writing was on the wall. It wasn't an industry I wanted to stay with. So I had to take an entire career, a lifetime of work in one industry, and make a change to be able to move into other industries and to find what I could do that was relevant and useful for other industries. So I took that challenge on. I decided to go into business for myself because that was the best way I could come up with to not have to make a move and to not have to stay in the same industry that I was in. And I gave myself some rules. If I don't have at least one client in the next 3 months who has nothing to do with media, and if in the next 6 months I don't have another client who is not from within my own network, and within a year, if I'm not making double the amount of money I made being somebody else's employee, then I'm going to go back to being somebody else's employee. So that was 13 years ago, and I had to work really hard. I mean, you know, none of this was easy, Mark, but had to really turn over every stone and be very brutally honest with myself about what I could do, what I couldn't do, what I needed to go learn how to do, and then just remain dedicated to it. It was a hard year, but I made all those goals in those timeframes, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. In fact, I was ahead of the curve, and I keep pushing myself. What I learned from that experience and what I keep applying is that I don't accept the limitations that others might place on me, and I don't let myself limit what I think I can do. When I hear myself expressing doubt or thinking, you know, gosh, I've never done that before, I remind myself that's all the more reason to go do it, because I don't want to be in the same place 2, 3, 4, 10 years from now saying the same thing. The only way I'll get to do it is if I do it.
And I really like how you set that deadline for yourself, which is something very valuable. Like some people, we get a little comfortable with where we are right now. Like we feel like we could be doing better, but we're comfortable with it. And you said, if I don't get these results, I'm just going to go back to working for someone. And like having that kind of deadline and that kind of end result for what happens if you don't get the clients, don't hit the end goal, that can really ignite you towards like saying, okay, I'm done with the whole comfy. I got to really push hard and make all this happen, take a lot of action. So I really like that challenge and the lesson that you shared with us. And another thing I'm wondering if you could share with us is, since, I mean, this is the inner bookworm coming out of me, but I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Oh, boy, there's so many. I read a lot of books. So three great books that will have a positive impact. I'm going to start with a book by my co-authors, Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner. It's not their work that's best known. That's called The Leadership Challenge. But a book that I really like is called Learning Leadership. It's really about learning about yourself and learning how to do more with what you've got. So it's a great little book. It's got lots of guided activities and reflections and whatnot. So Learning Leadership by Jim Kouzes and Barry Posner. Let's put that on the top of the list. The second book that I would recommend for this audience, I'm going to stay away from sales books because I just want you to read mine, Stop Selling and Start Leading, and Discover Questions. But if you haven't ever read some of the books by Pat Lencioni, I'm going to recommend the one that's called, I think it's called Get Naked. And that's a great book for anybody who's in business for themselves, anybody especially who does consulting work. And it's told in the form of a parable. It's a book that just is very easy to read because it's storytelling with some great takeaways. And one of the great takeaways from that book is about how to wisely give a little bit away so that people get addicted to what you can offer. Not giving the farm away, not everything, but just enough to get their interest and curiosity so that they're willing to work with you more. And third, because I have read it again very recently, is Mindset by Carol Dweck. That is a classic. It's based on research by the Stanford professor. And it's about having one of two different kinds of mindsets, either a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. A fixed mindset is one that doesn't readily accept challenges and doesn't easily try new things. In this day and age, the world that we live in, having a growth mindset is going to take you to incredible new places. So what's great about the book is that it gives some important advice about how to make that shift and have a growth mindset.
Deb, thank you for sharing with us those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes, marketbirdie.com/E257. For anyone who wants a book about content marketing, you could get your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets at marketbirdie.com/book. Just pay for the shipping. And my book, Podcast Domination, recent book, will also be in the show notes as well. But before we wrap up this episode, Deb, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
I think that we should all be asking ourselves more often if we are leaving it better than we found it. So when we wrap up or when we move on to the next thing, whether it's our own project, whether it's time with a customer or a colleague, whether it's in a collaboration, am I leaving this better than I found it? And if we can be honest with ourselves and always aim to leave things better than we found them, then we'll set ourselves up with a fantastic brand and lots of people who are happy to collaborate with us and support us.
Deb, thank you for sharing with us that great question, all the great insights throughout our time together. If you guys want to learn more about Deb, get her book, Stop Selling and Start Leading. That will be in the show notes for this episode. But once again, Deb, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
Thank you, Mark. It was absolutely a pleasure for me too. I appreciate what you're doing.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn